Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Eruvin Daf Samach Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin from the very top of Daf Samach Beis. In our previous shiur, at the end of our previous shiur, we had learned the Mishnah introducing this piece of Gemara and, of course, the Perek. The Mishnah spoke about one who lives with an idol worshiper in the same courtyard. In other words, you have two apartments, two houses, each one, one Jewish and one owned by a Gentile, and they share the same courtyard. We saw two opinions in the Mishnah regarding a situation like that. One Jew and one Gentile. Can the Jew carry in and out of his house, in and out of his house to the courtyard? According to the first opinion in the Mishnah, he cannot. The presence of the idol worshiper restricts the Jew from carrying back and forth. According to Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, there is no prohibition in that situation. Problems arise only if there are two Jews and the idol worshiper living in the same courtyard. That having been said, our job at the opening of today's shiur is to understand why is that? What's the basis of this machlokes? This, of course, is not to be confused with the standard case of two Jews living in the same courtyard without any idol worshiper. That's your standard problem of Eruv Chatzeros, where there is a need for people to join together to form a single entity in order to be allowed to carry from their totally private houses to their partial private courtyard. We've touched on this in the past, but it doesn't hurt to repeat, the principle being that this is a rabbinic restriction in anticipation of a person not coming to carry from a private domain to a truly public domain, for example, a thoroughfare or main plaza area where many people congregate. That gets involved with a Torah-level violation. So there is this rabbinic-level violation called requires Eruv Chatzeros so as to create this awareness and distancing one from the Torah level violation. Now, over here, we're focusing on the presence of an idol worshiper together with a Jew living in the same courtyard, private houses that open into a common courtyard. On the side of our Gemara, we have noted Goy Oser Bechotzer Ad Shesurchem Mimenu. One point that will come up is that a goy, the idol worshiper, creates a restriction upon the Jew until the Jew rents the property of, or the apartment, the home of the Gentile. Second point, goy oiser, the goy, the idol worshiper, creates a restriction. Shemo yilmad mimaisov. There is an idea that we will see in the Gemara that we don't want the Jew to learn from the ways of the idol worshiper. So we want to build in a sort of deterrent from a Jew in deciding to live together with the idol worshiper. So we impose hardships upon the Jew, Shabbos restrictions, as is our case, hopefully creating a deterrent from him from living in the same immediate vicinity, namely the same courtyard. Another point that we'll be focusing on is Kamu Yisra Elim Oisrim. When does this restriction kick in? Where the Gentile or the idol worshipper's presence causing a restriction? Rabbi Meir says, Afilu Echad, even one Yisrael and the Gentile, as we spoke about just a few minutes ago. And Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is the other opinion in the Mishnah. He says that if there are two Jews and a Gentile, will you have a problem. But if it's one Jew and one Gentile, there's no need to impose a restriction. Now we turn to the Gemara. We should note, by the way, that we also have a structural note where the diamond is featured, and this represents shlavim. These are stages in trying to figure out, to offer an explanation for the machlokes between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Rabbi Meir is saying that even one Jew and a Gentile and the idol worshiper is the problem, and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov saying that the problem arises only if there are two Jews and a Gentile. So the Gemara, Yosef Abaye bar Ovin, v'Rav Chinino bar Ovin, v'Yosef Abaye gabayhu, v'Yasvi v'Kamri. So you have these two gentlemen, Abaye bar Ovin and Rav Chinino. By the way, Abaye bar Ovin is different than Abaye mentioned here. Abaye was listening to these two gentlemen, Abaye bar Ovin and Rav Chinino bar Ovin, the sons of Ovin, and they were saying, Bishlamo, Rabbi Meir. And just take note that we have a long question that we are developing now. So they said that Rabbi Meir makes sense. He is the one that said that one Jew and one idol worshiper, that scenario where they share a common courtyard, is already problematic vis-a-vis Shabbos, and that the Jew cannot carry in and out of his house until he would, let's say, rent the property from him. But that itself, that in and of itself is a problem. So I understand Rabbi Meir, Kosovar, Diras Ovei Kichovim Shmo Dira. The dwelling of an idol worshipper is labeled a dwelling, so that it's a function of multiple private dwellings opening into a common courtyard, which is your basic model of a Eruv Chatzeros, where you need to make some kind of provision. And of course, a Gentile, the idol worshipper, he does not make an Eruv Chatzeros. That's something that's purely Jewish in nature. So in the absence of an Eruv Chatzeros, you will have an Isor. And that's a function of classifying the Diras Ovid Kechavim, the dwelling of the idol worshipper, as a legal dwelling. The legal, again, in a halachic sense. V'lo shno chad, v'lo shno trei, making no difference. Lo shno means there's no distinction, no difference, whether it's one Jew that's living there or it's two Jews that are living there. The fact that you have multiple private dwellings opening into a common courtyard creates the basic problem. Ella, Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, who says that the Goy does not create a restriction unless there are two Jews, my Kosovar, what is his opinion? I Kosovar diras ovei kichovim shmo dira, if he holds that the dwelling of an idol worshipper has the halachic status of a dwelling, afilu chad nami nitzar, even one Jew present there should be enough to create the problem. One Jew, one Gentile. You have two diros opening to one common courtyard. The Eloi Shma Dira, if the dwelling of the idol worshipper is not called a dwelling, afilu trei nami lo nitzar, even if there are two Jews, the presence of the idol worshipper should not impose a restriction. And if going along these lines, that the diras ovei kichovim is not shmo dira, so the two Jews can work it out between themselves, make an eruv chatzeros, and things will be mutter. Omar lehu Abaye. Abaye, after hearing this, Abaye says to them, and he questions their assumption. We have a little arrow to the right hand side of the Gemara. You can align this with the arrow above, where you see he questions what they said. V'sova Rabbi Meir diras akum shmo dira. does Rabbi Meir really hold that the dwelling of a akum, an ovid kechovim mazolos, an idol worshipper, is classified as a dira, as a dwelling? For Hatanya, we have a Tanaic source that says quite to the contrary. It says chatzero shel ovid kechovim harei u kedir shel behema. The courtyard of an idol worshipper is like an animal stall. A deer as a dwelling of where animals dwell. In other words, it's non-existent as far as our halachic considerations are concerned. Rashi says on the first narrow line, the ein lo koyach le'esor, and being that the chotzer of an ovid kechovim is classified as a deer shelbeima, doesn't have any legal strength to impose any restriction. Rabbi Meir komar lo lekamon bebraisa b'shmaitin, and this source, even though there's no name, it's taught by Rabbi Meir later in our sukya. So let's continue in the Gemara. As far as we are concerned, then diras ovid kechovim, according to Rabbi Meir, is lo shma dira. Ela, the Gemara continues, and you can see the second diamond is the second stage in explaining the machlokis tanoim in our Mishnah. Ela, de kuli almo diras akum lo shma dira. Everyone agrees that the idol worshipper's dwelling is not considered an entity that one would have to deal with based on it being a dira. It's not a dira. It's not a dwelling. Again, halachically speaking, it's not considered an additional dwelling as far as Eruv Chatzeros is concerned. Here the machlokes has to do with imposing a gezera, a restriction, so as to distance Jews from living with idol worshippers in such close proximity, so as to keep Jews from learning Yilmad Mimaisa, from learning from their ways, from their idolatrous, sinful ways. So we have to get into a different mode of thinking right now. We have a situation where we want to keep Jews away from idol worshippers. So the general idea is impose a difficulty for the Jew, that every Shabbos he will be restricted from carrying from his house to the courtyard. And that will create quite a bit of discomfort and difficulty for the Jew. So he won't come to dwell with them. That's the goal. So the question is, under what circumstances do we impose this restriction? So let's continue in the Gemara. The double underline is used here to highlight the names Rabbi Elozer ben Yankov and Rabbi Meir. The Gemara continues. Rabbi Elozer ben Yankov, Savar, Kevon de Oive Kichavim Choshud Ashvichus Domim, since idol worshippers are suspect of murder, certainly when it comes to Jews. There is this assumption that an idol worshipper would seize upon any opportunity he could to kill a Jew, of course, and get away with it. So, Rabbi Elozer ben Yankov is of the opinion, Trey, two Jews, the Shrichi the Dairi, Gozru Behu. Shrichi means common. It's common to find two Jews living in the same courtyard with an idol worshipper. And the reason for that is that being that there's a fellow Jew, so the fear of being a victim of this Shvichus Domim is seriously reduced. Therefore, the fact that the Goy is Choshed on Shvichus Domim in and of itself is not a deterrent for two Jews to live together with the Gentile. So we want to stop that situation, the common situation, where Elozer ben Yankov is of the opinion that we impose a gzera only under a common situation, a situation that could easily arise. So, therefore, it's only when there are two Jews and the idol worshipper do we impose our restriction. However, chad lo shchiach, lo gozu be rabbonon. have one Jew living together with an idol worshiper in the same courtyard is unusual. Why is it unusual? Because there's a built-in deterrent for the Jew to live there, and that's this chashad shvichus damim. He doesn't want to be killed. So you're not going to run into a situation where a Jew lives alone with a Gentile in a common courtyard, where each one has their own house leading to a common courtyard. The Jew, is fear-struck. So it's unlikely that situation will ever come about. He's not going to come to learn from his maisi because he's not going to be with him. Therefore, there's no need for the Rabbanan to intervene and impose some type of additional difficulty to separate them. As we said, just to repeat ourselves, it's a situation that's not going to arise in the first place. Verbi Meir Savar, Zimne de Mikri Vidayer. Rabbi Meir takes into consideration the unlikely situation as well. The Zimne means sometimes the Jew will live alone. He'll take the risk, so to speak, and live alone with the Gentile in the common courtyard. And now, that having been said, in Rabbi Meir's mindset, we say as follows. There are three points that are stated now in the Gemara to serve as a build-up or background to Rabbi Meir's point of view. So Rabbi Meir sees this situation of a Jew and a Gentile living in the same courtyard, each one having their own private apartments. And what about the chashad shvichus damim? So, in the Jew's mind, he's willing to take a risk from that standpoint. So, what do we say? Number one, ein eruv moyil b'mokom akum. An eruv won't be effective when an idol worshipper is there. The ein bitul rishus moyil b'mokom akum. The idea of the Jew in the absence of making an Eruv, because it doesn't help. An Eruv doesn't help. Eruv is the joining together of each one contributing some food to make a common entity. That doesn't help. And in the absence of an Eruv, Bittul Rishus also isn't going to help. Bittul Rishus is a phenomenon where someone who didn't contribute to an Eruv, so he gives over his dwelling in a legal sense. He's mevatel. He voids, or he submits his domain to the next party, so that there's in effect only one legal entity there. Once I submit my domain to you, so there's only you that remains. But that doesn't help. That's ein bittul rishus. This idea of submitting your domain to the other party, that doesn't work with an idol worshipper. Ad sheyaskir. The only solution in theory would be that the Jew rents the domain, the dwelling, or the domain of the idol worshipper, so that by renting the idol worshipper's property, so there's only the Jew, that would in theory be the solution. However, v'akum lo mogar. The Akum, the idol worshipper, isn't going to rent his property. So what's going to be with our Jew over here? He has no solution. And the Jew will then leave, being that he won't want to subject himself to these difficulties every Shabbos, once a week, being so restricted. And you can see that we have accomplished our goal of keeping the Jew away from the Gentile. Namely, once again, even though we're sounding a bit repetitious, even though as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, the deterrent of Shvichus Domim, of being a murder victim, is not a sufficient deterrent. So the Rabbonin kick in with their rabbinic restriction of the Eruv Chatzeros problem. The Jew has no solution, so that's what's going to keep him away from living in the same courtyard with the Gentile. Now the Gemara asks, "My taima, why is it that the goy, the idol worshipper, is not going to want to rent his property to the Jew?" Notice we have a very long question marking. Sheila is a question. Why is it that the Gentile, the idol worshipper, is not going to rent his property to the Jew? Ilema, Mishum de Sovar Dilma Osi Lavzuki Birishuso. If it's because the idol worshiper is fearful that the Jew will take over the idol worshiper's property. Achzuki is to take possession, take full possession. In other words, once the idol worshiper would rent to the Jew, that would give an opening for the Jew to claim the property as his own. So maybe that's the reason the idol worshiper doesn't rent his property. So the Gemara is going to now get into a distinction between two forms of rental. So the Gemara says, "Honicha l'madam arschius bria bo'inon." This fear on the part of the idol worshiper is true, is a reasonable fear, a reasonable concern, if the rental that would be required is called schius bria, literally a strong, healthy type of rental arrangement. Rashi says, bria chazoka. Sheyasne Yisrael imo lemalois kol amovui kelim im yurtze, where the Jew makes a deal or a condition with the idol worshiper that he, the Jew, could fill up the courtyard with whatever he wants, if he should so desire. So that could cause this fear on the part of the idol worshiper. Hey, what's this Jew about to do? He's going to take over the whole courtyard and claim it as his own. Elo lamanda omar schirus ruua boinon ma'iko lamemar. But according to the opinion that the form of schirus is not that formal, not that strong as we just described, some type of weaker type of rental arrangement, and we will see later in the Gemara what exactly would be the distinction between bria versus ruah. But ruah means shaky or weak, a weak form of schius. And then what reason is there for the idol worshiper not to want to rent his holding in the courtyard to the Jew? Why would, what's preventing him? He wouldn't be fearful as a result of a weak kind of rental arrangement that the Jew is going to then take over the Gentile's holding. So if we focus on this opinion called Schirus Ru'ua Bo'inan, the question is, why would the idol worshiper not want to rent? Rent means rent to the Jew his holding, the idol worshiper's holding in the courtyard, which would be the solution for the Jew. And yet, we explained before under Rabbi Meir's name that Akum lo moga, the idol worshiper is not going to want to rent. We see a bracketed section on the side. Well, you have a starred note that says Sograim l'shem dilug lokel ala kriya. The brackets that you see, and there's a bracket length indicator, the vertical dash dotted line, it shows you how long this bracketed section is. This is for skipping initially. The Gemara in the bracket section will explain what do we mean by strong form of rental versus weak form of rental. But working with the opinion right now that all that would be required is a weak form of rental, so why not use, why wouldn't Rabbi Meir see that as a solution? Namely, we have to be a little repetitive here, but a solution, namely as far as the Shabbos concern of a multiple ownership domain, well, couldn't the Jew rent from the Goy, creating a single entity? And yet Rabbi Meir says that the Goy creates a prohibition, that Schirus won't help. Well, why not? If all that's required is a weak form of Schirus, there's no fear on the part of the Gentile that the Jew is going to want to take over. So let's skip the brackets. Afilu hachi, choshish akum likshofim velo mogar. The idol worshiper is still worried about kshofim. Kshofim means black magic. That in the event that he would rent his holding in the chotzer to the Jew, so there that would be reason for fear of magical spells arising and threatening him, the idol worshiper, and therefore he's not going to want to get involved with any form of renting his holding to the Jew. So with that, we have sufficiently explained Rebbe Meir's position, that we are, in fact, worried about Shemo Yumar Mimaisov. Apparently, the chashash of Shvichus Domim, of being a murder victim, is not enough of a deterrent for the Jew to want to choose as his home, a place shared by a courtyard shared by a by an idol worshiper, and therefore there is a need for imposing the chotzer, eruv chotzerus restriction in the case of even one Gentile and one Jew. As we said, we have this bracketed section that now is going to be our focus, and we have a topic heading, as a subtopic heading, featuring Shnei Sugei Schirus Mehagoi. Echad is Schirus Ruah, and the second is Schirus Briah. Now, the brackets. The Itmar. Rav Chista Omar Schirus Briah. Rav Chista says that in order to establish a rental between Jew and idol worshipper, you need to have a formal, strong form of rental. Rav Sheshes Omar Schirus Ruah. Even a weak form of rental would be enough. My Ruah, my Briah. What do you mean by these terms? So we have a series, we have a stage marking or series marking. The triangles that you see here are the stages in explaining this chiluk. On the side, under our Mivneh heading, you can see Ilema, Ela are the highlighted words. Shlavim, Lahasbir, Hachiluk, Bein Briah, Leruah, Beschirus. These are stages in trying to explain the difference. The Gemara continues. Ilema, if you are to say Briah equals Bepruta, Ruah equals Pachos, Misha Bepruta, that a Schirus Briah would be where the Jew who wants to rent from the idol worshipper would give him a Pruta. Pruta is the is the smallest form of accepted currency, but it's a, an official form of currency, and that would be his payment, his rental payment to the idol worshipper. That would be a Pruta. Ruah would be a situation where he gives him something of less than a pruta in value. That's pachos mishav a pruta. And that would be called schirus ruah. The Gemara rejects this, though. And this rejection, we featured on the side under our dalet. We have a long rejection marking the dalet that you see encircled. And shows how long this rejection takes place. And being that we reject this distinction, we're still going to be in the middle of our question mode of what is the difference. So this distinction is now rejected. The distinction between Pruta and Pochus Mipruta. Mi Iko Leman Domar Me Akum. Is there anyone that would say that when you're dealing with an idol worshipper, the Pochus Mishave Pruta Loi, that something less than a Shave Pruta would not be of significance? Namely, that even less than a Shave Pruta is of significance. The Hashalach Rabbi Yitzchok Rabbi Yankov Bar Giri Mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yitzchok sent in the name of Rabbi Yochanan the following teaching. Hevu Yoidim Shesoichin Mino Akum Afil Bos Mishave Pruta. Let it be known that a formal rental can take place if you're dealing with an idol worshipper, even if all that you offer him is something worth less than a Shave Pruta, because in the idol worshipper's eyes, something worth less than a Shave Pruta has significance. It's not something that he overlooks. And we're going to say another word or two about this idea of something he doesn't overlook in a moment. The Omar Rab Chiyo Bar Abba Omar Rab Yochanan Ben Noach Ne'eraga Pochos Mishave Pruta Velo Nitan Lihishavon. There are seven Noahide laws, seven what we call Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. Included in the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach is the prohibition, is the Isser of Gezel, of theft. What constitutes theft? So this halacha of Rabbi Yochanan says that Theft is even when something less than a shava pruta worth of something, of an item, is stolen. If an idol worshiper steals, let us say you have a box of 200 paper clips that costs 39 cents. You can rest assured that a singular paper clip is worth less than a shava pruta. However, in the event that an idol worshiper would steal a singular paperclip, he will be guilty of a capital offense in the realm of what we call the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. And why is that? Because the idol worshippers amongst themselves don't overlook, they don't forgive, so to speak, someone who would steal from him a paperclip. Being that in his eyes it's something that has significance, therefore, it's something that constitutes a form of theft. And v'lo nitan lishavo means that in the event that theft takes place, it's not something that he can rectify by returning. The Rashi points out, v'lo nitan lishavo negabi Yisrael k'siveheshiv esegzela. And as far as Jews are concerned, so the Torah says that in the event that a Jew commits theft, he can return the item or the value of that which was stolen. But in the realm of the idol worshippers, the Torah doesn't make any provision for returning. Since he violated the mitzvah of theft, meaning the prohibition of theft, he is thereby subject to a capital penalty. So the distinction we made before between Schirus, Ru'ua, and Bria, revolving around whether it's a Shavu Pruta or Pochus Mishavu Pruta, that's rejected. Because as far as when you are dealing with an idol worshipper, there is no difference between a Pruta and less than a Shavu Pruta. Ella, the next stage, trying to figure out the distinction, Bria equals B'muharki V'Burgani, Ru'a below Muharki V'Burgani. These terms, muharki and burgundy, are different forms of what we'll call courtyard furnishings. Benches and platforms, or what have you. And the issue is, filling up the courtyard with these things, that let's say the Jew wants to rent from the idol worshipper. So a schirus bria would be a situation where the Jew has the option, or actually fills the courtyard with all of his benches and platforms, if he should want. Ru'ah would be some kind of rental arrangement, but not allowing for that, for the Jew to actually fill up the courtyard. Ha-nicha, here the Gemara simply goes back over that which we had learned earlier. This is a review now. Ha-nicha l'madam r'schirus b'riya b'inan. That means, I understand. Ha-nicha means things are good, things are sensible, make sense, if the requirement is schirus b'riya. So I now understand why the goy will not want to rent to the Jew, because that will cause a feeling of threat in his mind, that here the Jew is going to take over, he's going to fill up the courtyard and then claim the whole courtyard for himself. But according to the opinion that says that a rental can be accomplished even without that condition, so that you'll have a situation of some type of gesture will be made between the Jew and the idol worshipper regarding the rental arrangement, without a provision for the Jew to actually fill up the courtyard with his furnishings, why would the Gentile not want to rent under such circumstances his holding in the courtyard to the Jew? And yet we said above, an idol worshipper is not going to want to rent. Why not? Afilu hachi, the Gemara answers, choshish akum l'kshofim v'lo mogar. The akum, the idol worshipper, is concerned that this rental arrangement will enable spells to be cast, and that will cause fear on his part, and he won't want to rent. The Gemara continues with a quote from that which was mentioned in passing above. Here the Gemara quotes the entire source. Kufa. Chatzeru shaloivit kechovim eru kedir shel behemo. The courtyard of a Gentile, or of an idol worshipper, is like the like a an animal's stall or an animal stable. And if you find yourself in a chotzer of idol worshippers, you can carry from the courtyard into the houses, and into, from the houses into the courtyard, and there's nothing to worry about. V'im yeshom Yisrael echod, oser divrei Rebbe Meir. If there is a Jew that lives in that courtyard, that restricts anyone else from carrying from the houses to the courtyard, because it's viewed as the courtyard of a Jew, and there are multiple dwellings. Again, when we say dwellings, we're not saying that it has the legal status of a dwelling, but it nevertheless is a case of a Jew living with a Gentile. The Rashi says, "V'im yeshom Yisrael echad dor imoyen," a Jew is living amongst the Gentiles. Oser al kol Yisrael lahotzi min abotim lechotzer. That Jew imposes now a restriction on carrying from the houses into the courtyard. Meshi kechatzero, because it's viewed as the Jew's courtyard, and the halachas then of chotzer restrictions kick in. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer lo lomeinu oser. The fact that there is a Gentile present does not create a prohibition, until you have a situation where there are two Jews that are living there. The Rashi, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Yaakov Omer, Ashu Shnei Yisraelim, Dorim Bishnei Botim, V'Oisrim Zalzeh, Rishus Ho'akum, Chaluko Mehen, V'Oser Ho'akum Al Botehen, V'Hein Osrin Al Boteh Ho'akum. Only if you have two Jews that are living there, and the fact that you have two Jews, so they impose a restriction one on the other, and they impose a restriction on the dwelling of the idol worshipper as well, and the idol worshipper in turn imposes a restriction on their properties. And all of this is, as Rashi says, "Vein oisrim al bote akum lahotzi lechotzer deshavu rabbanon l'dir sakum diro kedomer le'el." Under these circumstances, when you have two Jews, then Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says the dwelling of the Gentiles is considered a dwelling. Avol b'Yisrael yichidi lo shavu rabbanon l'dir sakum diro. But if it's a single Jew in the living with idol worshippers, then Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that the single Jew does not create or make the idol worshippers' dwelling as a legal dwelling. V'lo havi oser al beso shel Yisrael, v'lo Yisrael oser al beso, she'en chilik rishus ba'akum. The fact that there is a Gentile, even multiple Gentiles there, if it's only one Jew in the position of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that does not create a situation of multiple dwellings opening to a common courtyard. The Gemara continues on Omid Beis, with Omar Mar, a quote from the source we just learned. Chatzer she'akum areu kedir shel behema. The Gemara asks, V'ho anan tanan, but have we not learned hador im ho'akum b'chotzer hare ze oser olov? That one who lives in a courtyard together with an idol worshipper, so the idol worshipper imposes a restriction. So that would indicate that the dira of an akum is considered a dira. Loi kashya. No, there's no contradiction here. Ha diisei, ha delesei. If the Gentile, the idol worshipper, is present, then under those circumstances, a restriction is imposed. If he is not present, there is no restriction. Rashi says, ha delesei la akum, lo osar. Then, if the idol worshipper is not there, so there is no restriction. When we say there, it means physically there. It's owned by the idol worship, but he's not there. V'im yeshom Yisrael acher oser al beso shel akum v'afilu lesei liYisrael. If there is another Jew there, then that imposes a restriction on the house of the akum, even if the Jew is not there. The Gemara continues. Umay Kosovar. We are now going to try to analyze this scenario of a dwelling, a dira, a home, an apartment that whose owner is not there. We want to look into what legal status does this have, again, vis-a-vis Hilchus Shabbos. E kosavar dira below bailim shmo dira. If it were so that a dwelling without the owner is considered a dira, afilu akum nami nitzar, then even in the case of the idol worshiper not being there, even if he's not there, there should still be a restriction, so that the top quote, the source from the top line of Chatzer Shel Akum Areu Kedir Shel Bema, wouldn't make sense if you're trying to explain that as a case where the idol worshiper is not there. But if the dira below Bailim is considered a dira, is considered a dwelling, so even in that case there should be a restriction. The e kosava dira below Bailim lo shma dira, and if it were so that a dira without the owner there is simply not called a dwelling, afilu Yisrael nami lo nitzar. So even if there is, let's say, have two homes and the Jew is and the one of the Jews is not there, so his absence, the fact that it's owned by the Jew, should not be the reason for any restriction. And that's what we saw in the Rashi that we read on the fourth line from the top in the middle of the line. We'll read it again. Rashi there says, "V'im yesh shom Yisrael acher osir al beisa shel akum afilu lesa Yisrael." If there are two Jewish homes there, and one of the Jews is not there, it's nevertheless considered, it's viewed as a case of two Jews living there. And if this is so, that dira below bailim is not considered a dira, so the fact that the Jew is not there shouldn't make any difference. Namely, if he's not, actually, let's say this more accurately, the fact that the Jew is not there shouldn't be reason for imposing an iser by the mere fact that it's owned by a Jew. Once you establish the dira below bailim is not called a dira, he's a non-factor. The Gemara answers, and this answer takes a few lines to develop. We have a diamond that we're using here to highlight the term Yisrael versus Akum. The Gemara explains, "Le'olam kosavar dira below bailim loy shma dira." So let's establish this, that a home, apartment without the owner there, it's not considered a home. It's considered as if it's non-existent, we'll say. For Yisrael, when it comes to a Jew, so let's just imagine a standard case of two Jews living in the same courtyard. Two separate homes that open into one courtyard, both owned by Jews. We will tell you that if an Erev Chatzeris is not made, so you cannot carry from your home into the courtyard. No difference whether the Jew is there or not, where one of the Jews is not there. But if you're telling me that Dira below Bailim is not called a Dira, why are you so restrictive in the case when a Jew is not there? So the Gemara explains, the Yisrael dechi isei osar, when it comes to a Jew, when he is present, he imposes a restriction because his home is called a dira. When he is present, his home is considered a dira. So we say ki lesei, even when he's not there, gozru be rabbonin, the rabbonin impose a restriction. So that in the case of a courtyard where only Jews are living and one of the Jews is not there, we say that if they didn't make an Eruv Chatzeris before Shabbos, so they cannot carry from their homes into the courtyard. Even if one of them is not there. And why is that? Because if he is there, so then it's a formal dwelling, and the halacha is that people that live off a common courtyard have to contribute food to create a single entity, and he didn't do it. So even if he's not there, we impose a restriction. Akum, however, when it comes to an idol worshiper, the chi isay, even when he is there in his home, it's not called a dira. It's not called a dwelling. And yet we know that the idol worshiper does impose restriction, but that's gzeira shemel yumud mi maisav. That's a gzeira because I might come to learn from his ways. So we say, ki isay osar, when he is there, so the idol worshiper imposes a courtyard restriction. Ki lesay lo osar, when he's not there, so he doesn't impose a restriction. Let's just repeat the main point. The difference between the Israel and the Akum is in the situation where the owner is there. When the owner is there, when it comes to Israel, his home is called a dira, and that is the reason for the whole din of Eruv Chatzeros in the first place, as we explained earlier. When the Akum is there, he's not really there in the dira sense. His problem, or the restriction he represents, is an outside consideration called Gzeirus Shemel Yumud Mi Maisav. Therefore, we make this distinction when they, the Israel, or the Akum, are not there. The Gemara asks, the Chilese Lo Osar, is that really so, that when the idol worshipper is not there, there is no restriction? V'atnan, ha-meniach es beisoy v'holach lo lishbois biracheres. One who left his home to spend Shabbos in another city. Echad Nochri v'echad Yisrael Osir, Divrei Rebbe Meir. Whether the person who left his house is an idol worshiper, or the person that left his house is a Jew, and they didn't make some type of Eruv Chatzeros arrangement before Shabbos, or they didn't rent from the Nochri, or whatever, they didn't make a provision before Shabbos, there is going to be restriction. So what do we see? We see the Nochri, the idol worshiper, who left his house, still represents a problem. The Gemara answers, Hossam, that case where the Nochri does represent a problem, even though he's not there, is the Osi Biyome. He went away to a close location. He went to some other place on before Shabbos, but a place nearby. So there is a fear that he might come back on Shabbos itself. Rashi explains, the Osi Biyome, Shaholach Lamokom Koroiv, the Yovel Bo Bayom, the idol worshiper had gone away to some nearby place and he'll come back on Shabbos. Bishoros Lu Koidim Shiyovo, if you allow the use of that courtyard vis-a-vis carrying in and out of their houses before the idol worshiper comes, they'll continue carrying in and out of their houses even after he comes back, and it won't occur to them that he's back. So that's why in the case of the Nochri who went away to a close location, we make a restriction across the boards, even though in general if he went away to a faraway location, we would be lenient with regard to the Gentile's home that's left vacant. We now continue in the Gemara with a section that deals with Psak. And under the Mivneh heading, you can see we have a double underline featured. And we point out that these are different opinions as to how to paskin, what levels of strength will we be assigning to the psak of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, halocha k'Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Now Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is the opinion, we might call him the more lenient opinion, his claiming that the Gentile Jew dwelling scenario represents a problem only when there are two Jews dwelling together with the singular Gentile. However, one Jew, one Gentile is not a problem as far as Eruv Chaseros is concerned. So that opinion, the opinion of Rabbi Zvi Yaakov, is halacha. Now, halacha means that you will rule that way in a public lecture, in a public setting. You will say, announce, the halacha is like him. A second opinion, though, is Rabbi Huna Amar Minug, Rabbi Zvi Yaakov. Minug is assigns a lesser level of importance to this opinion, but it means, as Rashi says, that we wouldn't rule this way publicly, but if someone comes to ask you, what should I do, on a private level, we will tell him, that if you are living there by yourself, so you can, with the Gentile, with the idol worshippers, so you can carry from your house into the courtyard. But again, according to Rav Huna, we wouldn't say this as a public ruling. Rabbi Yochanan is even a lower level of importance assigned to this opinion. He says, Nohagu Om Krablozer Min Yaakov. That means that we wouldn't even tell you as a formal psak that things are okay, a formal ruling, even on a private basis, that if you're living alone with the Gentile, with the idol worshipper, then that it's okay. But if you happen to conduct yourself that way, we won't protest. So Nohagu is a situation where we won't protest if we see, let's say, someone, a Jew, living alone with an idol worshipper in a courtyard, and we see him carrying from his house into the courtyard, we won't protest that. Now, we have a marking, a brackets, that is of... it's very unusual in Gemara markings that we have something of this length. And in fact, it's such a long bracketed section that we are not going to use a bracket length indicator. It would be too... would clutter our page too much. But we have a note on the side. The starred note mentions, Sograim at Samachim Olamid Beis. These brackets represent a bracketing off of Gemara until Daf Samachim Olamid Beis. You can see that that's a whole Daf away from here. And of course, in our Daf Yomi context of Gemara markings, we're not going to be dealing with the section after the brackets until our next year, Mirtz Hashem. But if you see Samach Gimel Amud Beis, and you'll notice a star also opposite this in the margin, the lower half of Samach Gimel Beis, if you count up from the bottom, around 10 lines from the bottom, you'll see the brackets close, and we have a note there, the Sograya Midaf Samach Beis Amud Beis. After the brackets, we go back to a discussion concerning Jews and Gentiles living in the same domain, the same area. There we'll talk about an alleyway and the issue of Jew and Gentile and idol worshiper living in the same area, and what can we do to make it allowed to carry in and out of private homes to more public type areas. That having been said, we have a bracketed section, and under our nosei, our topic, the topic heading in the margin, you can see we've written, and we note, Ad Samachim Olamid Beis. That means until Samachim Olamid Beis, we're going to deal with Moira Halacha Bifnei Raboi. We're going to deal with the issue of issuing a halachic ruling in the presence of one's teacher. And there's a very serious restriction against someone, a student, issuing a halachic ruling, paskining halachas in the presence of his teacher, in the presence of his rav. That's the general topic that we will be preoccupied with as we go on in the Gemara. Initially, we have a new marking. We have a bow tie shape, and under our Mivneh heading, you can see these represent Shnei She'elos Be'inyan Ma Mutter Lahoros Bifnei Rabu. Two questions will arise regarding what might one be allowed to say as a halachic ruling in the presence of his rav. And by the way, when we mention in the presence of his rav, we're going to see it doesn't mean that they're necessarily sitting right next to each other, but within the same vicinity, and we'll be more specific in terms of distances, etc. We should also point out that if you look into more commentaries, we are basing our shiurim on Rashi, but when you look into additional Rishonim, you'll see that this topic is, like every other topic, full of detail and alternative opinions, and meaning alternative explanations to that which we are going to be saying. So now let's turn to the Gemara. Omar le Abaye le Rav Yosef. This is a question. It lasts a couple of lines, and hence we have a long marking. Abaye asks Rav Yosef, Kaimolon, we hold Mishnas Rav Lozer ben Yaakov Kav v'Noki. The teachings of Rav Lozer ben Yaakov, Kav means are literally it's a measure, but it means are few in number, but when he speaks up, it's Noki, it's clean, meaning it's a type of teaching or ruling that is very reliable. It's clean, meaning there are no glitches, no catches, no inaccuracies in what he has to say. The Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, we saw this just a couple lines above, Halacha Rav Lozer ben Yaakov. As far as Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel is concerned, when it comes to this matter, we will paskin like Rav Lozer ben Yaakov. Mahu l'royin b'mokum rabbi. The question here is, let us say the issue comes up of Jew dwelling with Gentile. Can I, as a student, rule that it's okay for the Jew to carry in and out of his courtyard if he is alone, as according to the opinion of Rav Lozer ben Yaakov, but is considered a very reliable form of psak? In other words, adopting his opinion as far as Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel is concerned, that's the way to go. And being that Mishnas Rav Lozer ben Yaakov is kavanoki, it's an opinion that has a great deal of halachic weight to it. It seems to be something fairly obvious. So could I paskin? Could I rule like that? Even if my rav is in the vicinity, it's called b'mokim rabbi. Omar Le, Rav Yosef answers Abaye and says, listen, when it comes to the issue of being Moira Halacha B'mokam Rabo, the best thing is to stay away from any halachic rulings, even that which appears to be very obvious. Rav Yosef says, Afilu Biasa B'kuscha Bo'i Minei Mirav Chisto Kol Shoni De Rav Huna V'lo Ori Li. Even something like the issue of an egg. A biasa is an egg. And the question would be, can I eat an egg with milk? There are more commentaries in Tosfos, you could see over here, deals with what, when we speak about an egg, what exactly are we talking about, what situation of the egg, but let's keep things very simple and superficial for right now, and simply say, if someone were to have the question, were to come to you with a question, can I eat an egg with milk? Maybe something like a cheese omelet. Is that mutter? So, if a question like that, in the back of your mind, you might ask, like, what's the question? What's the question in the first place? So, you have to understand that an egg comes from a chicken, which is a chicken itself represents meat. Represents something that's we call fleishig, and the milk is milchig, so that you might imagine a question in the back of your mind. But every one of us knows that milk cheese or milk with an egg is of course no problem, because the egg is not the meat. So something as simple as that, as can I eat an egg with cheese? I asked, says Rav Yosef, I presented a question along these lines to Rav Chisda during the lifetime of Rav Huna, and Rav Chisda, who was a student of Rav Huna, Rav Chisda would not answer me. He wouldn't rule on that. It should be pointed out that Tosfos understands the case of the egg to be a little more complicated than the way we presented it, but nevertheless, even according to the Tosfos, it's a question that's very easy to answer. The ruling is very obvious, and yet Rav Chisda would not rule on that question as long as Rav Huna was alive. So that if you are asking me, says Rav Yosef to Abaye, about can one rule like Rav Losher ben Yaakov in the presence of one's teacher, I would tell you no. Omar le Rav Yaakov bar Abel Abaye. Here you have a question. Another question, as we indicated with our bow tie, a question concerning this issue of being Moira Halacha b'fnei Rabu. Can I issue a halachic ruling in the presence of my teacher? Omar le Rav Yaakov bar Abel Abaye, kagon Megillas Tainis. Megillas Tainis is a written compilation of days that have some we'll call festive nature about them. They are days when miracles happen to the Jewish people, and they were observed by non-fasting. In other words, these are days that it would be forbidden to fast and forbidden to eulogize. There is a list. We don't observe these days anymore, other than Hanukkah and Purim. But outside of that, today we don't practice that which is contained in Megillas Tainis. The Gemara deals with that issue elsewhere. But it's something that's written, it's spelled out. So the question is, something like Megillas Tainis, Diksiva Umanchot, a written work. And by the way, in the days of the Gemara, there was very little written Torah other than that which is contained in the Tanakh. But this was something that was written out, and mancha means it's lying there. Anyone can open it up and read it. Mahal aroy ba'asrei derabe. Can one answer someone regarding a Megillas Tainis date? Can one rule on that? Say that, today you can't fast because it's one of the days listed in Megillas Tainis. Can I say that, let us say, in the presence of my Rav? And here you have a case of something that's so obvious. It's written, it's spelled out. It's not as if I'm imposing on my Rav's turf, if you will, in terms of issuing halachic rulings when maybe honor should be accorded to the Rav. It's something that's so obvious. Omar le Abaye. By the way, he was the one that asked Rav Yosef this type of question before. Abaye here is now answering Rav Yaakov bar Abba, and he says, Hochi Yomer Rav Yosef. Thusly said Rav Yosef to me on this topic of issuing rulings in the presence of one's Rav. Afilu biyasa b'kuscha boi minei merav chisto kolshoni de ravuna velo ori. Even something as simple as the issue of the egg with the milk. The kuscha is a milchig type of dish. It's a dairy dish. Rav Chisda says, I asked of Rav Huna, I, Rav Yosef, had asked from Rav Chisda this question during the years of Rav Huna, and Rav Chisda would not paskin. Below Ori, Rav Chisda would not paskin. Later in the Gemara, the sources for this issue of being Mer Halacha B'fnei Rabo will be presented, but we are following along the order of the Gemara, at this point, just simply understanding that that is something that is problematic. The Gemara continues now with something that might seem a bit surprising, and we'll have to explain it, but before we do that, we note the new marking, the triangle. The triangle represents a series marking, and we have an explanation for the triangles on the side of the Gemara, under the Mivneh heading. Dugmaois shel hora yedei talmid chover. Examples of rulings on the part of someone who is a partial student, partial colleague, a quasi-student friend relationship. And we have a note to Ayin Toisus Dibur Masel Rav Chisda Al Pi HaToisus Kalalnu Ravina Ba'omid Haba in a triangle. So we'll see Ravina also in a triangle on Samach Gimel Omid Aleph. And why we did that is along these lines of this issue of Talmud Chover. The Gemara continues. Rav Chisda Oiri Bekafri, that means Rav Chisda would issue a ruling in Kafri Bishnei the Rav Huna, in the years of Rav Huna. Rav Huna was alive. Now, but we just got finished saying that Rav Chisda would not issue rulings in the life of Rav Huna. So, it's explained, Rashi explains, Bekafri Shei Mokum V'lohoye Mekoymil Sheol Rav Huna U'mekoma B'pumbedisu Shtein B'bavel. Kafri and Pumbedisa were both in Bavel, but Kafri was not the place of Rav Huna. So we're gaining a little more insight now that what we said before is that Rav Chisda would not issue a ruling even concerning that which was obvious in the lifetime of Rav Huna. What we meant there was in the presence or in the locale of Rav Huna. But if he were far away from Rav Huna, he would issue halachic rulings. Continuing at the top of Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, Rav Hamnuna Ori Becharsa de Argus. Charsa Argus is the name of a place. Charsa is a city. Argus is a person's name. He is the one that built Charsa. But for our purposes, Charsa de Argus is the name of a place. Rav Hamnuna would rule halachic matters. Bishnei de Rav Chisda, in the years, in the lifetime of Rav Chisda. Ravina Sor Sakina. Now, you can see we have a new marking. This bow tie marking is explained under the Mivneh heading. These represent Meisim Bevedikas Sakin Shel Shechita. Sakin Shel Shechita is a knife used for slaughtering. Inyan Zeh Koshu L'moyer Halacha B'fnei Rabu. There is a connection between this and the issue of halachic rulings. The Rashi points out, and he gives some background over here, on the second line from the top, Sor Sakina, Sor is to show the Sakin, the knife. Bodak Sakin L'tabuch. This is the checking of a slaughtering knife. A slaughtering knife must be smooth, without any nicks in it. And that is established by a checking. The Gemara in Chulin tells you a different number of ways of checking, but what's common practice is the rubbing of one's fingernail along the edge of the slaughtering knife. So that has to do with checking a knife for a tabach, for a shaychit, for a slaughter. V'lo umru laharo sakten l'chocham al-nei kvoidin shel chocham. The idea of showing a knife to a Talmud Chacham is really to show honor to the Talmud Chacham. And that has to do with the, we'll call a person's initial slaughtering, but on a let's say on an ongoing daily basis, you don't have to be shechting in the presence of a Talmud Chacham. But at the beginning of your shechita career, or we'll see later if you're visiting a place and you're shechting in some new locale. So as an act of honor to the local sage, you present your knife to him to check. V'nimsa Ravina notel lo ateres kovod ha'ir v'rav ashi rabo v'masa mechas yahave v'hu v'hi b'bovel. This Rashi will be of more significance as we go on in the Gemara. So, Ravina sor sakinu b'bovel. Ravina checked someone's knife in Bovel. Omale Ravashi. Ravashi asks, Ravina, my time ovid mor hochi. Why did you do thusly? Why did you check the knife? So, we'll see shortly what's bothering Ravashi. Omarle, so Ravina says, V'hol Rav Hamnuna Ori B'charsid Argis B'shnei the Rav Chisda. Ravina says, what's the problem with my checking the knife? Rav Hamnuna ruled halachic rulings in Charsid Argis in the times of Rav Chisda. And again, we can't explain too much because the Gemara has to explain the give and take here. But apparently, Ravina's checking of the knife was based on the fact that Rav Hamnuna issued halachic rulings in the years of Rav Chisda. Omar le lav ori itmar. Rav Ashi says, no, Rav Hamnuna did not issue halachic rulings in the time of Rav Chisda. Omar le, Ravina says back, itmar ori, the itmar lo ori. There actually are two expressions. One version of the story with Rav Hamnuna says that he did issue rulings, and some versions say he did not issue rulings. And now we explain. B'shnei de Rav Huna Rabbei hu de lo ori. Rav Hamnuna, during the lifetime of Rav Huna, his teacher, that is what you are referring to when you say lo ori. It is true that Rav Hamnuna restricted himself from issue halachic rulings, but that's in the time of his teacher, Rav Huna. However, the other version of ori, of he did issue rulings, but ori, b'shnei de Rav Chisda, Rav Hamnuna did not restrict himself from issuing halachic rulings in the times of Rav Chisda de Talmud Chover Dilei Have. Rav Hamnuna was, his relationship with Rav Chisda was a type of student-colleague relationship, concerning which the restriction of Meir Halacha B'fnei Rabu does not apply. The Ano Nami says Ravina to Ravashi, Talmud Chover Demor Ano. I am, with regard to you, the same thing, student-colleague relationship. And that's why, if you are wondering why I was able, how it is that I checked out the knife, even though you are around, you, Rav Ashi, are around, and in the same locale. Nevertheless, I am not restricted from the checking of the knife, because, as we said, I, to you, am a Talmud Chover. Rashi explains Talmud Chover, Chochom Kemoisoi Elo Shelomad Mimeno Dovarechot O Yoser. They are of the same intellectual capacity, the same level of wisdom, if you will. However, he's called a Talmud, he's called a student in the sense that the other one taught him something or more than one thing. The Gemara will be continuing with more incidents of checking knives, as you can see by just scanning ahead in the markings, the bow tie shape appears. But in the context of our Daf Yomi, Gemara marking shiur, with before we conclude, just let us remind you that we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. That having been said, so with this we conclude our shiur for today.